Welcome back, everyone, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm your host today, Carl Sweeney, and I'm joined by a man who has written extensively about the X-Files, Chris Knowles.
Hello.
Yeah, good to get you back on the podcast. I mean, we're at the halfway stage of season 11, and we've just seen James Wong's episode, Ghoulie, episode 5.
Mm-hmm.
When we're here to obviously pick through the feedback we've had on the episode, we'll get into all the specifics as it comes up in these messages, but just overall, what were your thoughts in a nutshell on Ghoulie?
Loved it. Thought it was fantastic. Really, really excited about this season. It's such a marked contrast to season 10. It's just astonishing. I mean, it's like they took this giant ship and sort of did a 180 with it, you know, sort of going off in this weird direction over the side of the earth and then sort of, you know, went back on course. And I mean, we've had, by my estimation, you know, like four new classics in a row, as far as I'm concerned.
I feel much the same way, and it's a really great thing to see. And even though I think the first episode was like the weakest by far, even that had some virtues anyway.
I have a theory, and I'll just say this real quick. I mean, I just think Chris is really sick of the mythology and just sort of writes it like it's homework. I don't think he's really engaged with it, as and certainly not to the extent that people believe he is. I think it's obligatory to him, and I just don't think he really cares. I think he's more interested in these very weird things like Plus One.
Yeah, because Plus One was like night and day, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, let's see what people thought about Ghoulie. I mean, I've had a quick look, and people basically were pretty positive on it overall. Obviously, there's some dissenting voices. And we'll start with a couple here that kind of have a different take on the same sort of thing. So Cortland says, I think as a monster of the week, it was not what I hoped, but as a mythology episode, it was the best one in a long time. Relieved to see this plot, the Scully Mulder Williams story, finally move forward from its long time standstill. Anderson and Duchovny did a beautiful job, and I can't wait to see more. And Tanya Hernandez says, another great ep that starts as a monster of the week and morphs into myth arc, and one that finally moves the Williams story forward. The morgue scene was heart-wrenching and beautiful, and the end with Scully's look of hope and pride at William was perfect. Gillian killed it. So a couple of things I wanted to pick up on there. So how did you feel about, you know, it ostensibly appears to be some kind of standalone investigation, and we realise that it's not that at all? And I've seen different opinion on that. How do you feel that was pulled off?
No, it was a mythology episode. Straight up, I mean, classic Carter Spotnitz era mythology. That was not that the whole standalone thing was just a dodge. It was just a premise. You know, it was just to get the story started. I mean, because Ghoulie is, it's nothing. It doesn't exist. It's just a hallucination that William is able to instill. The absolutely was not a monster of the week. It was a straight up and down old school season 8 almost kind of style mythology episode that, you know, I would have expected. Well, I guess I wouldn't have expected if the series continued because William's, you know, 16 years old or whatever. But I mean, it's straight up no holds barred old school mythology. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's the way I see it. I think if there's ever any doubt about whether it's a mythology episode, it almost invariably is a mythology episode. And, I mean, there are loads of episodes, aren't there, in the original series that appear to be about one thing and then very quickly become something else. I think something like Eve is an example.
Well, that was Carter's whole idea, is that, you know, take a hard left turn when everybody's expecting you to go right. I mean, that was a philosophy of his, you know?
Yeah, and I thought what Wong did here, I think the teaser very effectively conveys that, like, this is a story about altered perception, doesn't it? From the moment the girls kind of attack each other. So, personally, I had no problem with the direction the story took.
Well, I just want to add one thing, because I think this is a really important point. Because Wong is doing something really clever and really needed for this series, is that he's really, with this and Founders and Mutation, he's really trying to pull all these strands together and, you know, create an all-encompassing mythology wherein the standalones and, you know, the monsters and the psychic episodes are all of a piece, that they're all part of the same basic narrative. So what we see in Ghoulie here is that his powers are really similar to powers that we saw in Pusher and Kitsunagari and also Badla. So he's taking these themes from other episodes, and the inference here is that, okay, all this other psychic stuff, like, you know, Clyde Bruckman and enclosure and things like that, it's all part of the same phenomenon.
Yeah, I remember you making a somewhat similar point talking to Darren. I think it was about the episode Alone in Season 8. Yeah, I like that. What about this issue of that scene in the morgue, then, that Tanya refers to? So, obviously, kind of a Gillian Anderson showcase. How did you like that scene?
To be perfectly frank, that wasn't my favorite scene. I know what Wong was going for, and I applaud him for that. I'm not sure if the direction suited the script. I think that the way it was played and the way it was shot, I think that we needed to get a bit more in depth with Scully. We, you know, the camera needed to really be playing off her lead and really showcasing her emotions. And I'm not exactly sure we got that, but I understand what he was going for, and I think, you know, it was the right decision.
Yeah, it was certainly a bold attempt, wasn't it? All right, so Karma says, I like the episode. I am glad William was not portrayed as a heroic, perfect Uber child, instead a messed up teenager trying to figure things out. Yeah, I liked that, and I've seen some people not being too happy with the fact that he has got two girlfriends or whatever. I thought it worked, and what did you think?
Oh, I thought that was fantastic. You know, the whole thing, you know, again, getting back to this whole POV perception issue with the X-Files, you know, when we hear people talking about, oh, William is the, you know, the new Christ child and all this kind of thing, you know, particularly, well, like, almost exclusively in the ninth season and I guess the last two episodes of the eighth. I mean, this is the way people are looking at him. I mean, this is not necessarily who he is. This is not necessarily, I mean, it's unreliable narrator is, I think, the touchstone of X-Files storytelling. So in that regard, I mean, William, what do we know about William from the stories themselves? I mean, he does this whole creepy move where he makes the mobile over his crib move, and then he basically incinerates a bunch of UFO cultists. So, I mean, even as a baby, he's not like, you know, he's not very Christ-like. So I think that in that regard, I think that it's true to his arc, and it shows that, you know, he's dealing with powers that are beyond human comprehension. And in the case of, again, getting back to Pusher, because so much of this reminded me of Pusher and my favorite arc, my favorite storyline in that arc, Kutsunagari, you know, just showing that this is somebody whose powers and whose relationship to those powers is not necessarily undergirded by, you know, moral constraint.
Mm. And, some of those episodes in Season 9 go down a bit better, don't they? Like the Providence stuff, if you don't take what the cultists are saying literally.
Oh, I think I take it for granted that I wouldn't take it literally. I mean, knowing the X-Files, I mean, going back all the way to Red Museum, I mean, you're not supposed to take that stuff seriously. I think the mistake that a lot of people did make is just, you know, this whole idea of, like, passive television viewing where you do take it seriously.
Yeah, well, I was the same, to be honest, and it was only, like, revisiting the episodes that I started to see them in a different way. But, yeah, definitely, I think a lot of viewers do. All right. Reynard Muldrake says, false reality sums up Season 11 theme. Ghouli would have been a great Monster of the Week in its own right. Skinner exposition dump felt contrived. Mulder would question his knowledge, but Mitch Pileggi, great acting. End scene, glad they didn't meet, gives us an emotional beat for later in Season 11. William finally has good story. All right, so on the issue of, like, false reality, I was listening to your podcast with Raj that we'll give a bit of a plug to at the end, but I know you're kind of into this idea of, like, alternate reality, altered reality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where do you think it's going? It's a really interesting, like, undercurrent through this season, isn't it?
I would not be surprised. I don't want to make predictions because that's a terrible business to be in with the X-Files. But, I would not be surprised if... And I don't remember where I said this, but I believe I said this somewhere, is that if we end up back on the bridge for the very final scene of this series, we end up back with that close up on Scully's eye and everything that we've experienced this past season is some kind of hallucination or whatever. Or either that or she's like on a, you know, the last scene is her in like some sort of alien torture chamber or something, or maybe the both of them. I mean, who knows? But it would not surprise me just the way this is, particularly the way it looks, you know, the color, the color palette that they're using, the photography. It looks so different than anything that we've seen. But I mean, I'm really loving it because it feels very modern. It feels new. It doesn't feel like last season when they're just trying to retrace their steps.
Yeah, it feels more joined up, doesn't it? As if they got together and like sort of hashed this out. But when you read the interviews with the writers after each episode, that's not what they're saying, but it just feels like that, doesn't it?
Oh, I'm sure they did. Yeah. You know, writers are very narcissistic and egotistical in Hollywood. I don't know if you picked that up yet, but I'm sure that they had all kinds of meetings. And I'm sure that the network demanded it, said, you know, this 10th season was just a mess. The tone was just all over the place. You know, get together, hash this out, and make this series work as a piece.
Yeah, and so far it's certainly working for me. And I like the little touches like the altered taglines and stuff as well. All right, so Kathy G says, I absolutely loved Ghoulie. It gave me everything I want in a mid-season episode. Finally moved the Williams story forward without giving away all the answers. I love the angst from Scully, Mulder, Skinner. Great acting from all, and seeing CSM in Skinner's office was thrilling. Well, I know that when we were talking about episode 2 a few weeks ago that you weren't entirely on board with what they're doing with Skinner. I mean, how do you feel about it now? And I know some people have criticized this meeting between Mulder and Skinner because he's kind of dumping this info on him. But what are your thoughts?
Well, Skinner has access that Mulder doesn't. You know, and don't forget that, you know, prior to last season, Mulder was out of the FBI for, you know, a dozen years. So I think that it makes sense to me. I mean, Mulder is learning things through Skinner. But let's not forget that all might be a lie. You know, there could all just be just more misdirection and misinformation. And, you know, my pet theory continues to be that Mulder is the father and that Scully's fertility was restored in the sixth extinction.
And I guess in terms of Skinner, episode 6, we believe, is like a Skinner episode to a greater or lesser extent. So I guess that should put some flesh on the bones of what he's thinking about all this, too.
I love seeing all the Skinner stuff. I mean, Mitch Pileggi was always underused in this series, and it's just terrific to see him used more.
And it's good to see him play alongside William B. Davis again as well. I was trying to think. I mean, I can't remember if they've shared a scene before season 11 since like Zero Sum. It's around that time anyway. I don't think they crossed paths much later on in the series.
Well, he kind of told him off, you know, and then, you know, CSM Carl disappears. Yeah. And then, you know, he sort of, Skinner summons him back. It's like summoning, you know, the devil has to be summoned, that kind of idea. Yeah, I think it's great. And I just think that scene that we saw with Carl in Skinner's office was just James Wong just throwing us back to, you know, season 2 kind of vibe.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Christian Villacorte, and I know I've pronounced his name wrong on the podcast before, so sorry if I've done it again, says, like the way they've incorporated the retention of William's otherworldly powers to establish his identity, embracing his half-alien biology and as a link to Scully, though this somehow contradicts the events in Season 9, now to normalise him when he was an infant. Yeah, I mean, I have no problem believing that, like, Spender's, whatever Spender did has worn off, or it wasn't quite adequate, or whatever. It doesn't trouble me too much.
Or is it just a plot device to get rid of a character that the network didn't want in the movies?
Yeah. Sadly.
Could be. Either or. Take your pick.
Absolutely. Ray Noel says, I love it. After Plus One, it's the next best episode of Season 11 for me. My only complaint is that the Ghoulie here seems out of place. I hope they have another episode just for that Ghoulie monster. Would be awesome. Well, I mean, I'd be surprised to see Ghoulie again, but you never know. But, I mean, it is fascinating to wonder, like, what manifestation we're going to see of William's powers next time we catch up with him, isn't it? Because, you know, he's incredibly powerful, and they could go any sort of way with that, couldn't they?
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And again, I mean, Ghoulie didn't exist. Ghoulie was just a little trick that, you know, William was playing on his girlfriend, so.
Yeah. All right. Michelle Milbauer says, as a whole, I don't think it was a bad episode. I don't care for the William storyline in general, but it's a thing, and I think that they need to address him. Could have done without the monster. I think that Mulder's reactions to everything in the episode made sense. In the past, Scully has been the one to keep Mulder from falling apart. This time, he was strong for her. Was it just me, or did anyone else notice that when he was apart from Scully, he was more on edge? When Mulder was looking for Scully in the house, the look on Duchovny's face was heartbreaking. Very well played, in my opinion. He appears to be trying to keep himself from falling apart while watching her looking at photos and barely holding herself together. So, yeah, about I think a lot of the reaction to this episode has been about Anderson, but I'm curious to get your take on Duchovny as well, because what it sort of reminded me of is, I think what we were talking about, like when we talked about Wet Wired, and you sort of said that, you know, you see these times when Mulder's kind of FBI training kicks in, and it kind of felt a little bit like that to me, you know, when they believe William or Jackson is dead. How did you see it?
In much the same way. I think this was David's best episode so far. Mm. I think there was real meat on the bone in the story for him, and I think he played it really well. And it's, you know, something that I pointed out in the past, that he can really find these very strange beats in a script and play them in a way that most actors would never do. And, you know, I mean, I certainly have issues with David's acting, but yeah. I think when he's really given something, you know, a challenge, something challenging to play, that he really rises to the occasion.
Since episode one, really, he's been much stronger, I think. Episode one of season 11. They both kind of really turned up raring and ready to go, it seems, for this season.
I thought he was good in season one. I mean, I think season one was a terrible episode, but I think he was very good in it. You know, and all the more so given just how just all over the place the plotting and the dialogue was. So I, you know, kudos. I thought he was really good in the scene with, you know, cigarette smoking man, Deep Throat, as I call him, and Diana Fowley Jr. So I thought that really worked.
And I thought he was very good in the Darren Morgan episode as well. He had some terrific line readings and stuff there, didn't he?
Well, that was just a terrific episode in general. I mean, that was like, I thought I was in 1997 again. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is Darren Morgan. You know, because, I mean, I've made no secret that I thought Weremonster was pretty terrible.
Yeah.
You know, I know I'm in the extreme minority on that, but this Forehead Sweat to me was like grade A, five star, you know, knock it out of the park and down the highway, Darren Morgan.
Yeah, great stuff. All right. Ryan Sprague said, I loved it. I thought it was a beautiful and dark way to introduce William. Gillian Anderson had me crying like a baby with the monologue in the morgue. Elizabeth says, my two criticisms are that the Scully monologue seemed out of character for the show, in that the show usually turns away from scenes like that. It slowed the pacing down for me. Other criticism is that Mulder's grief or lack thereof wasn't addressed. Well, I guess we kind of gave our thoughts on that just a minute ago. Otherwise, I thought the episode was very good. The show feels so much like the original run. It's a beautiful thing. G said, I appreciated the episode more because I sort of had a feel who William was thanks to the Ghoulie site. I think this episode should have been two episodes long, but it was well done. I'm convinced CSM only injected something to fix her problem with conceiving. He's not the dad. Yeah, did you see that Ghoulie site? That was quite a nice little thing that they put online, I thought.
Yeah, I did check it out. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're going to keep on updating it or not, but it'd be interesting.
But you know, I mean, let's be frank, that's a pretty clear ripoff from Twin Peaks.
Oh, with the
That little
the zone or whatever
site,
it was.
Yeah, the GeoCities looking site, the 1993 looking website they had, yeah.
Definitely. Feed on Your Fear says, I loved every second of it. David and Gillian had me bawling. Her speech to what she thought was a dead William was heartbreaking, and the way Mulder was trying to stay strong for Scully but then broke down a little when he was talking to Skinner was amazing. Miles was awesome. Miles being Miles Robbins, who played William. Yeah, so, I mean, what's your take on, like, his acting then? Because I've been worried for a long time that whoever they chose to play that part, I don't know, I just thought it was such a huge call that they could very easily get it wrong. But, I mean, I thought it was pretty good. What did you think?
Well, you know, it's interesting because back in the day, you know, the old fandom was really hostile to William. And my daughter was born right around the time he was. So I kind of took that very personally, you know, and you know, and as a father, you know, as a father of three by that point, I sort of saw, you know, the reaction to William in the fandom as just being very juvenile, you know, just, you know, people who were still 13 years old mentally and, you know, didn't like kids and didn't want anything to do with kids. So I was actually deeply offended by it. So seeing William now and seeing, you know, having raised two Williams, very much Williams, believe me, I understand his character. I thought it was very well played. I think that it's very hard for an actor like that to come into an established franchise and play a character with so much expectation put on his head. But I thought he did a great job. I thought that it was very convincing, and it's, you know, not an easy role to play because it's not a sympathetic character.
I mean, what I liked was, I know they get killed off like immediately, but you do get the sense that like the Vanderkamps, you know, there was a real family unit, you know, because a lot of the fan discourse is just about, you know, wanting to see Mulder and Scully reunited with William. But, you know, we shouldn't forget that, like, he's obviously been raised by an adopted family since he was, you know, incredibly young. So at least I liked that, even though they're kind of dispatched brutally, I suppose.
Well, it showed that they gave him a good life. They gave him a good upbringing, you know, that he was well cared for. But, you know, we see this alienation, you know, with this whole, like, Malcolm X thing. He feels like he's part or a part from the rest of the world. And I can't help but think that that was James Wong doing a little X-Men tease there that, you know, that he's like an X-Men character. So they couldn't really have an X-Men poster on the ceiling, but, you know.
No. But, of course, a lot of people compared Wong's last episode, Fan's Mutation, to X-Men as well. Yeah, interesting. All right, we just got a few more before we head off. And Marlene says, I thought some of the monster and myth connections felt cobbled together with Skinner's exposition, and Ghoulie as a creature was a MacGuffin, but the ideas of fear and loss and what Scully says about people paying to be scared suits the story. Very compelling, remains mysterious. Loved the end and think it says a lot about Scully and Mulder. She could have been disappointed or angry that William was gone again without her knowing who he was, but she's happy that she spoke with him. Mulder has become more selfless, not making the emotion about him. And MKB touches on the ending too. She says, I love the ending. There aren't words that truly express how lovely, meaningful and hopeful the gas station surveillance camera scenes are. It's all in Scully's face, Mulder's eyes, and his hands on her shoulders, her hand grabbing his. Francois Chau was fantastic, and he is the guy who played William when he appeared as like the pickup artist chap. Mm-hmm. So yeah, great. I really liked that last scene too, and I thought Wong handled it very well. Like when they run out to the to the road to see where the car's gone, and the camera sort of starts to circle around them. I just thought the whole scene was very well put together.
Yeah, it really, really rang true. I think, you know, the fact that, you know, she's like, you know, you mentioned that she's happy that she got a chance, you know, even if he's disguising himself, that she got a chance to talk with him and whatnot. I mean, that's very true. And it's very emotionally honest, I think.
And I'll tell you a scene that hasn't come up in this feedback, but one that I really liked was when Scully meets with the psychiatrist and she starts giving her the lowdown on what's in William's visions. I don't know, just something about the way that, like, she delivered it, I thought was effective in a way that like some of the stuff about the visions in My Struggle Free wasn't, or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's interesting too, because we're talking about tying things together. In that sense, I sort of felt that, you know, it's sort of tying to Plus One, you know, and the whole idea of, you know, Judy in the mental hospital. I think that, I don't know if it was intentional on his part, but it seemed to me that, again, Wong seems to be taking it upon himself to say, okay, we've got this mess of stories. How do we make this make sense and give fans, you know, a sense not only of closure ultimately, but a sense of like they have been watching just the same series. They weren't watching, you know, three or four different series in one.
All right. Final comment for today comes from Dominique, who says, I loved it. My favorite of the revival so far. Here's hoping Chris Carter won't mess up the finale. So I just wanted to get your take really on like, how optimistic are you then? I mean, we've had four very strong episodes in a row, like by our consensus anyway, and we're heading into the backstretch really. And how are you feeling about the second half of the season? And, you know, what ultimately the final episode is going to, resolve things to some extent, I suppose.
I have absolutely no sense of the second half of the season. And I don't want to. I want it to like remain this unknown territory. I want to be surprised. I want to feel like I'm discovering something. You know, I think that one of the real downfalls of internet culture in our age today is just this, you know, lack of surprise. You know, Frank talked about you know, it's like knowing what you're getting for Christmas. You know, you want to be surprised when you open your presents. And that's basically how I'm looking at these episodes. And I really don't want to know. I don't want to project my imagination to that because I want to be surprised.
Cool. I mean, I'm somewhat similar. I always avoid the trailers and stay offline the day before the episode and that kind of thing. So, yeah, nice. And, I mean, I know one thing is that we've got another Wong-directed episode to look forward to. Episode 8, I think it is. And I've got no idea what the premise is. But judging by this one, that should be one that hopefully that'll be a late-season highlight.
Yeah, I was very, very happy with his direction. It had a real sense of scope and size that reminded me in many ways of, like, the earlier seasons of the episodes of the X-Files before we started getting that whole tight eyeline thing that Chris Carter became obsessed with.
Yeah, he definitely made good use of the settings, I thought, in this episode.
And here's an interesting tidbit. Founder's Mutation was actually the most expensive episode of season 10, and it wouldn't surprise me one bit if this was the most expensive episode of the season as well, so...
Yeah, if people check out the DVDs from season 10, I think Chris Carter actually tells James Wong that in the commentary at one point, and Wong didn't know, I think. And it's quite an interesting little discussion they have, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of sweet, actually. I mean, the way it unfolds.
Yeah, and it sounded like Carter was very happy with what Wong did on Founder's Mutation, anyway. So.
Oh, yeah, I think if you're Chris Carter, at least at this point in the season, you've got to be very happy. I mean, I know it's not getting nearly the amount of attention that it got last year, or I mean, in 2016, or the ratings or whatever. But that, to me, this is the way I like it. I really didn't like. I didn't like season 10, as a whole. But I really didn't like this whole superheated media blitz, this bombardment, this X-Files nonstop, because it just makes you sick of the series before you even watch it. I think it just created a sense of resentment. I mean, maybe those episodes aren't as bad as I think they are. Maybe it's just I'm being colored by the just the horrendous media blitz that surrounded them.
All right, Chris, well, thanks for joining me today. In the meantime, I mean, where can people hear your other thoughts on on season 11, I should say?
Yeah, it was supposed to be weekly, but Raj and I have been, we've been very busy, so we haven't been able to do it as much as we'd expected. But I'm doing a revival of my Secret Sun Radio Mystery Hour podcast, and we've already done, the first two episodes. We did the first three, and because we did a two-in-one. And hopefully we're going to be able to do Forehead Sweat and Ghoulie sometime soon. But look for me on YouTube, or do a search for Secret Sun Radio Mystery Hour.
All right. Just before we go, a very quick public service announcement. So we're on Patreon now, and a few people have chosen to support the podcast recently. So I'm here to wish a very big thank you to Dina Ferrari, Astrid Kloster-Coetta, Adam Silver, Russ Hugo and Katie Doe. Thank you very much for supporting the podcast. And if anyone else would like to, you can go to patreon.com/thexcast and check us out over there. In the meantime, I think the next episode is episode 6, Kitten. So we'll be back in a couple of days to kick off our coverage on that. In the meantime, you can find us in usual places on Twitter at @X_cast, on Facebook at The X-Files Basement. But until next time, trust no one.
The X-Cast and X-Files podcast is produced and presented by Tony Black, alongside a dedicated group of podcasters and X-Files fans. You can find us on Twitter at The X-Cast, and on Facebook if you type in The X-Cast, or at our group, X-Files Basement, an X-Cast podcast fan group, where you can continue the discussion about all things Mulder and Scully. If you want to support The X-Cast further, you can now subscribe and become a patron of the show on Patreon. On Google, just type patreon.com/thexcast. That's P-A-T-R-E-O-N. You'll see all of our tiers, subscription options and perks, which include early access to episodes, bonus content such as commentaries on X-Files episodes, access to a patron chat zone, and even appearing on one of our patron roundtable discussions. We would appreciate any support you can give the show, so just go to patreon.com/thexcast to find out more. Our title music is provided courtesy of Will A, who you can find on Twitter at I am Will A Y E.